Under the skin. I'd like to welcome Jake to Under the Scales, Jake Huffman of the McLovins.
Hey, everybody.
A good friend of mine, and I got to say, just because this place warrants a mention, I know you're in podcast land, so you can't see this, but I'm looking at the Statue of Liberty from the 36th floor, right in Battery Park, and it's a beautiful apartment that a friend of Jake's and mine lent us for this purpose. So yeah. Thank you, Craig.
Yes.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you, Carol. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And a beautiful day. It's kind of hazy, and yet I can see for miles, miles and miles.
Beautiful.
Yeah, man. So I want to say, you know, Jake, of course, the drummer for the McLovins, maybe we should just take it back to when we met.
Yeah.
Because that was, I mean, I want to say 2009 or something along those lines. 2010, maybe?
Yeah, when we actually met.
Maybe we even go further back.
Yeah, I think if we go further back, because, you know, and it was just the anniversary of the M video, actually. I guess it was like November 30th, December 1st was around the time that it was posted.
So the You Enjoy Myself video.
Yeah, the one that started the McLovins.
Okay, you know, right. The McLovins love affair with the Phish audience.
Yes.
Because you were covering You Enjoy Myself.
Exactly.
And doing an amazing job.
Thanks.
And that was back when you guys were a trio and extremely young.
Yes, we were very young, and that was pointed out very quickly when the video went viral.
Hello, this is Tom. The You Enjoy Myself video that Jake and I are talking about was released in November of 2008.
But yeah, and then I think you reached out with an email, to say, because we also had the farmhouse video too, and you and Trey kind of reached out and said that you liked the video, and then there was part of Yem that we were doing wrong, and Trey was nice enough to actually like lay it out how it was supposed to go, which was awesome.
That's amazing.
Which we later fixed, which was great.
When I saw it, I was blown away by you guys. But that's the kind of thing, like I think that a woman was doing twist on the piano. So every now and then we get, you know, cool covers. So he reached out to you, and then somehow we took it a step further and got to know you.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess it was like around like 2010, you reached out to us. Carol actually had a Magic Johnson signed basketball, and she just posted a Facebook status, and I remember you hit her up.
Because my son was playing basketball at
yes,
the time.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And you, she like posted, it was like late at night, and like you reached out to her on a direct message and said, "Yeah, I'll take the Magic Johnson."
So I have now in my basement a Magic Johnson signed basketball, and my son's no longer interested in basketball. So if you want it back, you could have it.
No, it's yours now.
We mentioned her name twice now, so we might as well say that yes. Carol, that you keep bringing up, or that I brought up, who is part owner, at least lives some part time in this apartment.
Yes.
Is your mom.
Yes,
and also
mom.
Kind of was, or maybe still is, partially the manager.
She was. Yeah. Was a manager when it was the trio.
Okay.
That was the.
And also back then you guys needed someone to drive you.
Yeah, and to get us in the bars because we were like 16 years old. They wouldn't let us in.
So literally 16, and possibly even Jeff, the guitarist at the time, might have been 15.
I believe when we first posted the video, we were 14. 15 and 16.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
I think it was that.
All right. So already a very creative trio, and you know, playing a Phish song, of course, there were no keyboards. So
right.
So going back and listening to that You Enjoy Myself, there's a part where Paige is super featured.
Yes.
And Jeff is just doing that Trey's little pattern.
Yeah,
and you're drumming. Yes. But you do it exactly the right number of times. And then, boom, you go into the next part. It's really awesome. I love it. It holds up. So at that moment, you were friends with Fantasy Tour, right?
Yes, okay. Yes. We were abruptly thrown into Fantasy Tour. I had no idea. I didn't know who Fish was about 3 weeks before the Yem video, actually. I remember Jeffrey just brought it to practice. He's like, hey, like, you should check out this song. And we learned that song and then posted it, and then I realized who Fish was, and I was like, oh my god, I was so naive. Like, who, like, how did I not know who this band was, and what just happened?
Nice. Not knowing that you were about to be a jam band, kind of.
Yeah, that we were about to get thrown right in the mix of it, you know.
What other, same time period, you guys covered another very sort of difficult, challenging song and posted it? I forget.
We did Harry Hood too.
Okay, that was another Fish. Okay, awesome.
We did the red one by John Scofield, and
that was
really tough. That was one of the toughest ones we did.
Was that one Scofield with Medeski?
Yeah, Martin.
Again, you're missing keys.
Yeah, there's a lot of missing. You know, and what it was is, I think, and it worked, because when you're a young musician, at least for me, when we played a lot of notes, so it was actually easy not to have that fourth member, because we were already playing so many notes that there really wasn't any space for another thing. So I think that's why the sound felt like it was filled up, because we filled the space.
You sure did, yeah. So and already you were quite a creative band. You came out with, in 2009, an album called Conundrum, which is based upon the Phantom Tollbooth, the book Phantom Tollbooth. I went back and listened to some of that, and that's pretty interesting stuff. There's a lot of guitar.
Yeah, it's very guitar solo.
Yeah.
But
you're definitely, I mean, I'd like to know who your influences were, because you're definitely coming up fast as a really, really good drummer, even back then.
You know, back then, I was playing about 5 days a week at my high school, which was an arts high school for jazz drumming. I played a lot of bebop. The people who I was listening to were, like, you know, Elvin Jones, Art Blakey, you know, Billy Cobham, like a lot of jazz, because that's really what I did. When I went downstairs to practice, I'd have to practice, you know, for school, and like all these standards and jazz and playing,
right,
you know, fast swing and slow swing and doing brushes and things like that.
Nice. So that explains sort of your technique and your talent there was jazz based. I mean, Billy Cobham is so technically adept.
And it's a lot of notes. It's a lot of ghost notes. It's a lot of, and I think that's why I like, you know, I transferred over to liking Fishman so much, because there's so many details.
Oh, he sounds like two drummers.
Yeah.
He's, when he plays, no, it's very, very hard to duplicate those beats. It's just amazing.
And it, you know, everything's super well thought out and very, very technical, but it doesn't feel that way when you listen to it, which is the amazing part about it.
Yeah. Right, that's why it's incredible. So then you guys, you sort of progressed, and there was another album, which was also the trio, right, of you guys, which was called Good Catch.
Yes.
And that's so, looking you guys up a little bit, I see that happened in 2010. So you guys were like back-to-back albums.
Yeah, and the albums, we recorded them, you know, live. There was no,
yeah.
You know, I think I did the vocals after, but I think they both took like 2 days to do.
And right away, you, possibly for want of anyone else, or just because it worked out that way, you were the vocalist.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Really what it was is, at the beginning, I wanted to cover a Red Hot Chili Peppers song, Under the Bridge, and I started playing, and I was like, all right, who's going to sing? And then I quickly realized that if anyone was going to sing, like, I was going to be the one who had to try.
So you, Jeff Howard, and Jason Ott, the bass player, were a trio, and you were starting to kind of tour a little bit.
Yeah, we had just...
starting to think about getting serious about being a band.
Yeah, exactly. We were playing more in not just the Northeast. We were starting to, you know, hit New York, and we were getting offers to play in other parts of the country. And
we should say you're a Connecticut-based band.
Yeah, Connecticut-based band. So majority of the time we'd play in Connecticut. We'd hit Burlington a lot. We'd hit New York, like all around the Albany area a lot. Massachusetts.
And it was sort of it was a big deal. Some parents have kids that, you know, drive them around to do sports.
Yeah.
You guys had concerts, and like all your parents were there, and it was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was really special how, I think our parents saw that this was something that doesn't really happen to everyone. And it felt like we were in like a traveling hockey team. Like, I feel like that's yes. like, cause like hockey parents, they drive everywhere, you know, to do this.
I got the team aspect sort of from it. When I saw you guys when you were younger, you know, like one of the moms jumped in and was selling t-shirts, you know?
Exactly, yeah, you know, cool. Dad would do that. You know, Carol would take, you know,
the dads were the roadies.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. You know, my dad would like pack the van and, you know, get everything. And Greg started taping all the shows, Jason's dad.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right, right. Right then, I guess Carol, your mom, was asking me a lot of questions. Now that we had sort of this relationship, she was asking me basic things along the way for an early band, what to expect, what to do, what do they need now, that kind of thing. Yeah. And I'm not in Phish, so I didn't necessarily have the answers. And yet she still, we became good friends, and I loved to give advice when I could. The one thing that I was able to offer for sure was... when Carol said, would you write a song with Jake or the guys, actually? And that sort of was the beginning of several sessions.
Yeah, well, that changed everything, I would say. That would be from that moment that we wrote Cohesive with Anthony, that whole process was like jumping into like a pool of really cold water where everything was just like, oh, wait a minute, like, whoa, this is something new. And then, you know, being immersed, because the songwriting process, the moment that I'll never forget is when we were in the studio and it was late at night and we were doing the vocal tracks on Cohesive. And the way I was singing it, I was like going back to my old ways of how I would all sing it. And I remember you got on the microphone and you're like, you have to sing the song, like sing it with like the words, like, you know, elongate the notes because it's a melody. And I remember that was the moment I was like, wait a minute, like...
You had a mumble, kind of.
Yeah.
And I love the mumble. You use it now artistically, still.
Right.
We needed the chorus to hit a little bit harder. Yeah. And not to pat me or Anthony, you know, ourselves on the back. I don't think we know, well, Anthony does. Yeah. But I don't think I know necessarily anything about songwriting per se, apart from the fact that I've written a whole shitload of songs.
Right.
Which maybe means that I do. But in no means were we saying, this is how to write songs. But it was more like, let's write a song together and maybe you guys could like get a couple pointers or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was really, really nice having kind of the young vibe in the studio with me and Anthony, the older dudes. And it was great. I remember it flowed really, really well.
It did. And, you know, I don't think any of us knew what to expect. And I remember you and Anthony, you know, you kind of had these words and Anthony had this like little melody that was going down and just seeing how it like got pieced together. And I remember when like the bridge happened, we changed the key. Because it was in a different key, and then we started singing it, and I remember being like, wait, like, you know, you're really straining to sing this, like, why don't we change the key? And I was like, wait, you could just do that?
You could do that?
You could just change the key? Like, I guess you can. And
that's awesome. But that's amazing. So let's play Cohesive right now. This will all be over soon. A drone that wanders in the gloom. And when the dark invades my mood, that's when I start to come unglued. And when my pieces get releasing, I need to be cohesive. I need to feel cohesive.
Yeah.
good. That brings back some memories.
Yeah.
So the album that came out on was called Who Knows.
Yeah,
Who Knows. And that was released in 2012.
Yep.
And I have to say, so there's a song, so Cohesive kind of became something that you guys played a lot.
Yeah,
And it was like almost the hit of the time for the McLovins.
Yeah, without a doubt, you know, and at shows, you know, we would, you know, even years later, we would announce a song, we'd be like, and now for our, you know, smash hit single, Cohesive. You know, that's how we would preface it before we played it.
There's a really incredible song that you and I wrote kind of together, and I remember I put the lyrics together really thinking about being in your head on stage, and how, and it was a thing that happened to me.
It was eerily true. It was like, it was too real. It was awesome.
Oh, I'm so glad that you had said that right away, that it rang really true, and that's why I think you may have been able to sing it so convincingly. And it's really one of my favorite songs that I've written.
Hello, this is Tom again. The songs Cohesive and Hesitate were written with and for the McLovins by me and Anthony Crizon. Anthony, as you might remember, was the guitarist in my band Amphibian, and he was also the guitarist for the Spin Doctors. Listen to the song Hesitate for a little bit of a Spin Doctors vibe.
And the song we're talking about is called Hesitate.
Yes.
And here's a version that actually kept some of the Anthony guitar overdubs that you guys didn't have on your album.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they stayed on in this early version that I have. So
I
here
that.
It is.
Awesome.
No one else can hear this version. Here it is right now.
Every day, words are flowing, I can't hear what I say. Heads are nodding, people smile. Hope I keep on making sense for a while. And now you followed me home. You want to hear it from me when we're alone. I push the door, and it's closing, but I hesitate. You and I will get along, as long as I keep on singing my song. Gotta keep on keeping on, but if it's answers you want, I don't give anything for free. And you know, you didn't hear it from me. From the road, you can't keep up, you say I'm talking in code. You sing along, I catch your eye, but off the stage you find the well has run dry. I know I have that reputation, a lot I say is getting lost in translation. I push the door, but it's too late, and it's closing, but I hesitate. You and I will get along, as long as I keep on singing my song. Gotta keep on keeping on, but if it's answers you want, I don't give anything for free. From me.
So
wow.
And now we have to say there was some subtext happening. There was some drama in the background of the McLovins. And this,
yes,
like everything changed for you again. Like things constantly changed.
Yes, yes. I assume we talked about it when Jeffrey left.
Yeah,
yes.
You guys went from a three-piece to a four-piece.
Yes,
yet,
we did.
In a weird way that, you know, you were based on that sound, that guy, that prodigy, that guitar,
yeah,
sound.
And, you know, it was a decision that, you know, honestly, like, none of us, I'm sure Jeffrey saw it coming, but I remember when I got the phone call, it was very just like, it was very calm, it was very out of nowhere. And it was, you know, hey, Jake, like, hey, man, it was just like calling me like a normal phone call. Like, hey, man, like, you know, I really can't do the band anymore. It's getting to a point where, you know, we're either going to have to, you know, take it to this next level that I don't really want, you know, to, you know, essentially put in the effort for. You know, I have other things I want to focus on. You know, I think he was a junior in high school at the time, so it's totally understandable. And Jason and I are about to graduate.
So just a casual phone, like, you know, how'd you like that last episode of Breaking Bad?
Yeah, it was like...
you know, I think I had called him about practice the next week, and then he called me back like 10 minutes earlier. He's like, hey, man, just so you know, like, you know, no more band. You know, no more band for me. And honestly, like, I put down the phone, and I picked up and called Jason. And I was like, hey, dude, like, you know, so Jeffrey just quit the band.
Wow.
And he was like, why? And I was like, oh, he wants to focus on other things. And, you know, what was weird is that, I guess, we had just started college. Like, Jason and I had just started our first semester of college.
Right.
He was at University of Hartford. And
he's still in high school. Jeff's still in high school.
Yeah, and Jeff was still in high school. And so Jason had already been playing with this guitar player, Justin Berger. So then Justin came over, and Jason and I are standing here with this other guy whose name is very close to Jeff's name, you know, Justin, and we just started playing. And I remember after that practice, Jason and I looked at each other, and I was like, so I know this other guitar player, you know, Atticus. I went to high school with him.
Right.
Like, maybe we could bring him over and we could just kind of keep this going. Because, you know, he and I didn't want to stop. We'd had conversations our whole high school career about, you know, this is what we want to do. Like, we're in a band. We're going to keep playing music together. And, you know.
So rather than get, you know, sucked into, I don't know, self-pity or scrapping the band, you kind of just continued with new guys. But
yeah.
And even with the same name, which is, to me, an opportunity to retool, you know, because...
Yeah, and, you know, I wonder if I went back and we changed the name and started a new group, I wonder if that would have been a good choice for right then. But honestly, what happened and why I'm okay with how everything kind of played out now and how I kept it in my head is that we kept it under the same name. And essentially what happened is, you know, everyone who was a big fan of Jeff, which is essentially our Northeast fan base, just kind of dropped off the bandwagon.
Okay.
And we were left with...
Off the bandwagon,
yeah,
like literally.
Literally, they just nice. Jumped right off. From the time of when Jeffrey, when we first posted that You Enjoy Myself video, to the time when Jeff left, we had, you know, we gained a lot of exposure, and with... We kind of collected a lot of people, you know, to then come to our shows, and we made fans out of them, and we made, you know, we had people who wore t-shirts to our shows, and like I could go to a Phish show and I'd see a bunch of McLovin's t-shirts everywhere, and it was like really part of the Phish the Jam scene.
Yeah.
And really what it was is that the band changed so much.
You
and
did.
So drastically, essentially overnight, because I remember our last gig with Jeffrey was on New Year's Eve. Or the day before New Year's Eve, and the first gig with the new lineup was on New Year's Eve going over to the next year. So it literally was overnight.
Yeah.
It was just this dramatic change. And
wow. Well, I mean, it's a huge change, you know, losing, you know, like Carlos Santana from a band.
Yeah.
You know, and still calling it Santana.
And, you know, one thing that I...
Right?
I
because
say,
he was McLovin.
Oh yeah, I mean, well, you know, yes, he just it became it. It was
so
like,
that's
was
we're talking great. About the movie
yes,
Superbad,
yes,
the Superbad. Seth Rogen movie. Well, I guess Seth Rogen wasn't even in it.
Oh,
it was who was that guy? Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill.
Jonah
yeah.
Hill and this guy created a fake ID and just stupidly to get liquor and put one name on the license, and it was McLovin. And he looks exactly like Jeff, incredibly so. I'm surprised.
It's pretty uncanny.
So you had two, what you're saying, you had two McLovins.
That's we had two McLovins. The reason why it was oh wow, the bass player really looked like in the video, he has that. It's like the round bowl cut into that. That also is
with glasses.
Yeah, with glasses. But yes, Jeffrey looked like McLovin. Jason looked like McLovin. I didn't look like McLovin at all, but it was okay. It's like in ZZ Top, you got the two guys with the beard and one without.
You're the other guy.
I'm the other guy.
So there you are, and I gotta say, you kind of jumped. You personally jumped right into. Big time, different style of songwriting. Like almost from then on, there's now like a singer-songwriter vibe mixed in with almost like a funk soul vibe. And I mean, you're still jam bandy, but this album that just came out, for example, doesn't have a song that's even 4 minutes long.
Yeah.
And so there's some song emphasis happening, which and you, your vocals have gotten stronger. Everything, you've definitely changed a lot. And it's awesome. I just saw you live in New Hope, Pennsylvania. And awesome. I really got to say. It was just...
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, I realized that I looked down at my iPod and realized what I was listening to. I when I woke up in the morning and I had songs in my head, I was actually... it wasn't like long jams. Like, I didn't really want to improvise as much as I was before. I was kind of done with the jazz thing. And
to me, I've always been a song guy over a jam guy. And yet, when it's, jam's done right... There's nothing better.
Oh, because it can take you through everything.
Yeah, and you get to see the interplay of the bands that you can tell when they're listening to each other correctly, and a jam goes to this amazing, unusual place. But for the most part, in a studio, get the songs down and leave the jamming for live and on stage.
Yeah, it's because that's what we always said is we made the conscious decision to switch to writing songs. And we jumped headfirst in that and everything that meant. But we knew it shows that, we can't just cut the the big soul. Because that's part of the show. And if we're going to play 2.5 hours, you can't, you got to give your voice a break sometime, right?
Right, absolutely. So you guys came out with, in the new lineup, you came out with Beautiful Lights 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And then, I got to say... You guys have turned, you've poured gas into the engines again, and now you're old enough to drive and everything, and so you have your own van, and you guys really hit the road hard. I mean, you did festivals, everything, right?
Yeah, I would say we did close to about 180 shows last year.
180?
Yeah.
Oh my God, wow.
And, I would assume that next year we'll try to hit around 200, and really what it was is... Bill Sherman and Mike Novick, when they jumped on as management and wanted to produce the Red album, the self-titled album, McLovin's, that's when we kind of had these epiphanies of oh, wait a minute, we can find our sound, we can go on tour and we can actually, try to take this to that next level that everyone wants to take it to. And
I think you've succeeded, honestly, because from the band that I remember from then, 2 years ago, to the band I just saw, you guys, again, have transformed. You were new and getting to know the new guys in a way.
Yeah.
But now, let's talk a little bit about... Well, first of all, who's Bill Sherman? I know he produced you guys.
Bill is also the musical director of Sesame Street. He has an amazing resume of things. He did the music for In the Heights, that Broadway musical. He did.
Okay.
He helped produce the Hamilton album.
Oh my God.
The studio album for that.
Serious?
Yeah.
That soundtrack is going nuts right now.
Yeah, it's amazing. He's on another podcast called Quest of Supreme.
Okay.
Which is on Pandora. He's an all-around, amazing producer and songwriter.
And he's New York-based.
And yeah, he's New York-based.
So, okay, that's cool. Because Sesame Street is on New York, is in New York somewhere.
Yes, in Queens.
Okay.
So Bill jumped on the project, and so we were playing in Alabama, and that turned into Bill producing my solo album of, I had this collection of 6 or 7 songs.
Is that the friend?
My friend Jake.
My friend Jake, yes.
And so he and I, we did that together, and we realized that we really like writing songs and really like making albums together. And,
great.
I started working for Sesame Street, He gave me my first song that he gave me was a song that eventually ended up being written for Ed Sheeran.
So Ed Sheeran sang a song that you wrote?
Yes.
On Sesame Street.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Which is amazing. And then, you know, I've done a few other ones. You know, some of my Sesame Street classics are, you know, I did a Bert and Ernie tune, Bert's Training Wheels.
That's wonderful.
You know, D for Dinosaur. You know, there's a whole bunch.
It's funny that you have the Sesame Street relationship because Trey, growing up, I remember his mom did as well.
That's so funny. It's awesome. Yeah.
Bill and you, fresh off of My Friend Jake and your Sesame Street collaboration, plunged headlong into this beautiful new McLovin's album, which just came out.
It came out
2015?
2015.
Okay,
yes.
So last year. And that's what you're touring on still.
Yeah, we're still, yeah.
And I noticed you know, many of those songs among my favorites, like Hit It, Quit It.
Hit It, Quit It.
Talk About It might be my favorite.
I'm looking over my shoulder to catch a glimpse of your face. I bet my money, I bet all my money on you. I bet my money, I bet all my money on you.
Amazing song. But like right away, there's like a soul kind of feel, there's a funk feel, there's a singer-songwriter, I was saying.
Yeah.
But pervading for me, especially in certain songs, there's one called PT of all things. Yeah. If you put on PT right now and close your eyes, I get Steely Dan. I get Donald Fagen on the roads.
Good. I'm really glad you said that.
Really?
That's totally like where it's like pulled something like that.
Because I mean it's undeniable how Steely Dan-ish that is. Steely Dan-ish?
I would say besides me, because I'm not as diehard as Steely Dan, but Justin Atticus and Jason went through probably 2.5 years of like the only thing they were listening to was Steely Dan.
Well, it comes out big time.
Yes.
Well, that's awesome.
Hear.
Well, there's great, you know, there's really wonderful people in the, you know, in every incarnation of Steely Dan to learn from. So I don't think it's a bad thing.
No, not at all.
And it sounds great. It sounds amazing. So what was that PT? Does that at all refer to Fantasy Tour?
It's actually
a love-hate
is.
Relationship now, right, with you guys?
You know, I have nothing but, you know, good. I mean, I have nothing but, you know, positive things to think about PT for how it has impacted you know things. You know, I. Like anything on the internet, there's you know, it's like South Park. There's like, you know, there's trolls out there, and there's people. But you know, it is just, you know, I almost like it when there's a bunch of people who hate and then a bunch of people who like it, because it ends up kind of furthering itself, and it actually makes it more more of a battle. It makes it more like important almost. You know,
I think there's so many haters that people kind of tend to. You know, take it with a grain of salt. And in fact, just the fact that it's being mentioned, it is the thing, you know, mission accomplished, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because people now, like, they can hear that something's phenomenal, or they can hear that something's horrendous. And just the fact that people are talking about it means that it might be worth checking out.
Right.
Yeah, that's how it is these days.
Yeah, so, you know, it's all good. And actually, PT, so our first song that the band ever wrote was Purple Trees.
PT, Purple Trees.
PT. We wrote it because of Fantasy Tour. It was a little nod to them.
Okay.
So this was a jam. So we started playing Purple Trees like with the 4-piece lineup. We just started doing it. We're like, oh, that'd be funny if we started doing that. And this was the jam that we put into the middle. Like everyone would cut out, Atticus would drop in, and that was the jam. So I was like, you know what? There's no jams on this album. Let's put this cool, funky thing.
Okay. So in a way, a nod to the past.
Yeah, exactly.
That's nice. So you guys don't play, the foursome doesn't play much that the threesome played apart from that then, maybe?
Yeah, we really, at this point, I think the...
And how about covers?
We will do...
I don't think I caught a cover.
We'll do like a band song, like we'll play like Don't Do It. Well, that's Marvin Gaye, but you know, we'll Don't Do It like the band version, and Ophelia by the band, and then we'll do like a West LA the one that we did for the Jam Bass.
Nice.
We did a Songs of Your Own a series, and we just kind of did a funky version of it. So we'll do that sometimes if people like request that.
Right. I gotta say, your vocals have come such a long way. I've mentioned it before, but your voice is like a primary focus. And you know, I just saw you live, and I'm definitely a guitar watcher. But with the drums out front and you singing, kind of like when Don Henley of the Eagles sings, it's not what you expect. A strong lead vocal coming from behind the drums, but you move the drums to the forefront. You're out front.
Yes, many bands do not like playing with us because the drums are right out front. You know, that kind of harshes everyone's mellow. But yeah, you know, Levon Helm, Don Henley, all these. Actually, the Eagles documentary that I watched recently that just came out, Don Henley. I didn't realize how much I liked him and liked his vocals and how much I was actually taking from him without even really thinking about it.
Oh, okay.
But.
Yeah, me either. That Showtime special, I think it was Showtime, of the Eagles, the first one. There's two.
Yeah, it's like
don't bother watching the second one. But watch the first one, and you'll be blown away, whether you like the Eagles or not.
I like to try to separate, you know, if someone is listening to the record and they, like, if they had no idea who the band was, I would like it if they didn't know that I was playing drums.
Right.
You know, so that when they come into the show, they'll be looking at the stage and they're like, oh, that's weird. Don't they have a singer in this band? And then, like, you know.
And then you sing.
Yeah, and then, you know, I'll sing. And I like that surprise.
That is cool. And you're very, you know, like I said before, I'm a guitar watcher. I'm definitely a drum watcher, too. And you're extremely proficient. And you've mastered the art of singing and playing. It's like your drumming doesn't suffer when you sing,
Well, thank you. Yeah, the tempo is always the hardest one for me because, you know, I can put my drums on autopilot, but the tempo always has to be, you know. I'm lucky that I have someone like Jason, who not only has an amazing pocket, but I've also played with for, you know, 10 years.
Right. Atticus helps a great deal, too.
Yeah.
Because he's got a really good style of playing. Organ is him, and really helps with that funk pocket when needed.
It's very helpful to have the Hammond.
Yeah.
That's been a game changer ever since he started just playing organ.
That's really cool. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then we should talk a little bit about Justin, too, because, you know, talk about shoes to fill. He's a different style of guitarist entirely.
Yeah.
I'd like to say he's almost like kind of doing these beautiful patterns. He's kind of like become a pattern player, an atmospheric player. And it's nice. It's kind of nice.
It's awesome. You know, most of our songs, and I can say in this new album we're writing for right now, most of our songs come from a demo that, like, Justin will have an idea and he'll record it and it'll be like this repetitive pattern. And, like, you know, Justin he has the ability to create these very simple things that you can listen to for and not get tired of. But yeah, you know, he's a super atmospheric player, but he's also one of those people where, you know, if we're like, all right, Justin, it's time to, you know, to let loose on this jam, he'll also do that. You know, he can totally tear the house down in a solo too, which a lot of people will come up to me after a show and be like, man, you really gotta let the guitar player rip more, man. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of what I think. He doesn't mind taking the back seat, which is unusual for a guitarist, but I want to give him props because I love what he's doing, adding to the pocket.
Yeah, it's super musical.
Yeah, super musical. And you know, there's a song on this album that, you know, I already said that Hit It and Quit It and Talk About It are kind of my favorites. But there's this super, super sweet love song called The Regulars, or Regulars.
Yeah.
And that's you writing about you and your girlfriend, obviously.
Yes.
Hi, Kara.
Hi, Kara.
weed and protein powder, huh?
Yes, weed and protein powder. I actually, you know, I was thinking about your Clif Bar line that you always talk about.
So I have green tea and a Clif Bar. Yes. You have weed and protein powder.
I have weed and protein powder. That was funny. I was actually thinking about you when I wrote that. It's funny.
But again, this one is a perfect example of, like, it starts out and you hear just a real cool repetitive pattern from Justin.
Yeah.
He's got a great solo in that song, too. But the pattern, our forefront there.
It's great. They're like little earworms that just kind of...
Yeah.
It's great. I love earworms. So, yeah.
No umbrella when it rains. She runs about 10K a day. Blame it on weed and protein powder. But I'm always late by half an hour. about you every night, choking back tears of joy from my eyes. I am watching you while you're watching me too. Sometimes we stumble and fall in the light, but not tonight. No.
When do you start up again next year, 2017?
We'll start out. I think we're going out to Colorado, earlier part. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that, but you know, whatever.
Colorado.
Yeah, so I think Colorado is where we're going to start, and then
we'll
go back down south like always.
There you go. That's really cool. And I understand you're going to have a self-driving car take you everywhere.
Yep, we're gonna leave it to Elon Musk.
No, you're not, right? You have a van and you guys drive.
Yes,
and take
we leave
turns.
It to Jason, honestly.
Jason's the best driver.
Jason is the best driver. That guy could go forever.
And he likes driving.
He does. He's the glue. I'd say every band needs a Jason. And I'm sure that every band who is successful has a Jason-type person in there.
So one last thing we should touch on, just because you kind of brought it up. You mentioned a Northeast audience sort of not accepting you so much. Are you guys focusing on the Northeast because of that, or are you focusing away from the Northeast, or is it not affecting you at all?
You know, I would say that we, around the time that we dropped the Red album, we realized that, you know, we looked at a map of the U.S. and we kind of laid out, all right, on the last three tours that we did, here's where we're seeing the most amount of people, the most amount of reactions, you know, the most amount of plays online. And, you know, we realized that down south we saw like an opportunity, because we're like, you know, not, and partly I think it's because they never saw the original lineup. As something that changed, it's just going to take a little bit of time. For,
yeah.
Like what needed to happen is we needed to change, then we needed to go away and find ourselves and become something very strong and new.
Yeah.
So that when we did come back, it was this like, oh, I remember them. And, you know, because the first time, you know, the first couple times you go back to a place, people are going to still think, like, wait, wasn't that band?
Oh, right.
Like, aren't they the kids that did the, wait,
right.
What's that? You know, I'm sure it's confusing because we have the same name and
yes.
we have this,
yes.
the same thing.
Well, you brought that on yourself by keeping the same name.
No, well, totally we did.
Yeah, so you it sounds like you own that.
Yeah.
But you also owned having to change and get good
yeah.
again, and you have.
Yeah, because, you know,
I got to say,
the day,
you've arrived.
Like, yeah, well, hopefully. And, you know, honestly, like, the Northeast, like, well, like, I'll use Connecticut as an example. Like, we used to play, I mean, probably we'd play about 20, 30 times a year in Connecticut, like back in the day.
Right.
We play once a year.
Whoa.
You know, and we'll play, like, I played in Atlanta, and I played in Alabama 7 or 8 times last year.
Wow.
And I played in
Connecticut
once.
That's incredible. That's a huge change
mm-hmm.
for you guys.
Yeah.
So are you starting to almost feel like you're becoming a Southern band and you might move there or anything crazy?
We always make jokes with all the, you know, because our booking agents from Georgia too.
Oh,
so,
okay.
You know, our whatever we play with all the bands down there, we're like, we're essentially just a local, you know, a
yeah.
local Southern band who lives up north.
There you go.
Which is great. And, you know, it's...
That's fine. That's
it's
fine.
Interesting.
So are you guys all kind of New York Central or centric, or still
the band's still Connecticut.
Okay.
I'm the New York guy.
Oh, okay.
I'm the one who lives
you
here.
You work here.
Yeah. Yeah. I work here. And
and everyone has jobs and stuff. How does that work when you tour?
Well, everyone has jobs that are lenient to the point where, you know, like, we're like, touring is like essentially like at this point in all of our lives, the band is number one priority.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm lucky because a lot of the jobs I do with Sesame Street and the lyricist things that I can do on the road.
That's fantastic.
Which is very convenient.
Right. Well, Jake, it's been an absolute pleasure trying to catch up with you and McLovin's, and you've always sort of been in my peripheral vision because I have two fans, huge fans in my family, trying to make another one out of my son.
Yeah.
He'll get there.
Brody, come on, man.
He'll get
what
there.
What do I got to do?
But my daughter and my wife love the McLovin's, love, love, love. In fact, my daughter's birthday party is your next concert coming
up.
Yes. I don't know if you know that.
No, I do not. I have to have a surprise.
So, it's been really wonderful catching up with you again, Jake, and it was awesome seeing that show in Pennsylvania, and it kind of took me by surprise, I gotta say, even though I kind of should have known what to expect based on hearing your wonderful new album.
Well, thanks, Tom. This is super cool. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, and I just want to say, give them another chance, guys, if you haven't been to see the McLovin's, especially you Fantasy Tour people. All right. Great talking to you, Jake.
Thanks for listening. This is Tom. Under the Scales, as you know, comes out on the first three Mondays of every month. We won't be back until February 6th. On that day, I want to let you know we have a very special episode planned. The first of several episodes where I'm taking a deep dive into Trey's guitars, his signal chain, and his amplifiers. Along with me as co-host, I have a very special guest, Dan Cantor, guitarist, friend, songwriter, and I was very honored that Dan and I were able to go into Madison Square Garden on the second day of Phish's recent four-day New Year's run on the 29th of December 2016, and before Phish's soundcheck, Dan and I spoke to Trey at length. And it's a wonderful interview, and it's the first of several. And I want you to be on the lookout for that. And I'll talk to you guys all soon, and see you soon, and be safe.